Good morning. Today is Friday, the 20th of August. Joining us, Karen Deemer. Hi, Karen.
Good morning, Brian. Yeah. Good morning, listeners.
Yeah, you like the way I almost was smooth, huh?
Almost. It is Friday morning.
It is, and it is the 20th also, just to be redundant, in case somebody just tuned in and missed that 5 seconds ago. All right, are you ready for your question here?
I am ready for my question. All right.
Well, first one, this is not germane. Have you been to the fair yet?
I have not been to the fair yet. I did have tickets to the fundraiser event.
Oh, yes.
Ferrari, but that got canceled yesterday, so I'm not sure what my plans will be now.
Yeah, that was understood, but another sign of sadness, that's all.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Are you ready for your question? Why do pianos have black and white keys?
Ooh. Black and white keys. I'm assuming it would have to do with what the natural materials would have been when they were first created. Or maybe to, I don't know, somehow differentiate. I mean, in technical terms, I suppose we differentiate between the flats and the sharps and the regular notes.
You were closer on the first half of your guess. The white keys, of course, are the result of a decision made long ago to cover the regular keys on a piano with ivory. Ivory was chosen because of beauty, durability, and its susceptibility to polish. When it came to the constructing of the remaining keys, the sharps and the flats, it was decided that these should be made from a substance very close to ivory in feel and appearance, and as visually distinguishable from the white keys as possible. It was found that these requirements could be met by ebony wood. It's hard, heavy, durable, easily polished, and black as pitch. Ebony, therefore, became the choice for the sharp and flat keys. So you were right.
I feel like I should get a half a point.
Oh, yeah.
I go half a point on that one.
I think you would, I think you would get a 50-50 matching grant on that one.
Whew, that might be my all-time record for your question,
Brian. Oh, yes, indeed. So are you starting to see the changes, not from school coming back, but from some of the investment that's started from the state with Humboldt converting or evolving into a polytech?
Well, we're starting to see a few things. We're starting to see students come back, so that's exciting. And the campus store, just the temporary signage went up, and they are right on the corner of the plaza there, so they've been out with kind of a pop-up tent in front, selling Humboldt State gear right on the plaza during the Saturday Farmers Market, which has been exciting. And then we're just seeing a lot of planning work that's happening. You know, the official sort of request is into the state. And I'm just hearing a lot of talk in the community about excitement for really the new, I'll call them academic programs, but the new degrees, like what you could get at Humboldt State in the next few years around, you know, engineering and energy systems, fire science, the cybersecurity, information technology like IT, and even the cannabis studies, you know, really trying to legitimize the science around the agriculture of cannabis in this area that has been an economic driver in this region, but to be able to put some science kind of out in the community around that in a more public way. So people are excited, and then I've heard a lot of talk about the marine biology, you know, an actual full marine biology bachelor's people are really excited about as being sort of some of the first tier of new programs that would be offered through the Polytech.
Are you hearing any blowback or contrary voices to this? I've not, other than early on a couple of electeds were less than excited because of the housing challenges that they perceive that might be in effect.
Sure. Yeah, housing is a real crisis in our region, and we have seen, I mean, I think everyone's read or felt or seen, we've had a big influx of people that have moved and purchased properties. We've had more properties turnover, you know, in Arcata about 2 to 1 than we have in the last few years already between, you know, January and the end of July, that first six-month period. So we don't have the housing stock that would normally be reflected at where Humboldt State University's numbers are now, right? Their enrollment has been down for several years, and we did for about 1 year see a softening of the rental market here, but it is packed full in Arcata. So, yes, that is a concern, but one that this community has been preparing for to step up and to be able to provide housing. And I think what I'm hearing on the positive side is that as we're starting to plan and provide housing, it really is to support a huge economic driver that's building out in our community, right? It's not just to support folks, and not to say that this is bad, but we have a lot of folks that have the ability to telework, right? So they're moving to the community for that. But the housing that we're building around support of the Polytech build-out is to support that full industry here that's been here for a long time. And so I think people are feeling positive about that. Also, the housing, the initial housing, you know, is housing on sites that we have talked about for a long time. So what we call the Craftsman Mall site here will probably be the first build-out for Humboldt State Housing. And they're looking at, I think, around 800 beds of housing. And that's a design that this community has had mixed feelings about. But ultimately, the council did approve a design at about 640 beds for that site.
Is that the one that there was the contentiousness? I guess the simple thing for me, the dorm building across the highway?
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Under the name of the village.
Yeah, I don't know.
And we went through a lot of public process. And what I'm hearing from our communication with the university is that they'll really try to hold predominantly to the plan that ultimately was supported by the council at that time. It will have a few more beds, you know, than that final plan was, but the original plan started with even more beds than Humboldt State is proposing. So, and I think the project is also going to have a lot more student amenities because it is going to be built by Humboldt State. So we'll see. Yes, there will be some concern when some of that actual build-out comes into the community, but what I'm hearing is so overwhelmingly supportive of seeing a revitalization of Humboldt State, and I think it's just, this community is feeling recognized for the fact that Humboldt State has been such a strong science school, and to be recognized and then acknowledged and then given accreditation for that, I think people around here are really proud about.
I think that's, there's going to be a resurgence of pride with the alumni, too. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Karen Diemer. Oh, boy, aren't we the pros around here, huh?
we try to fake it on one Friday morning a month, Brian. That's what I know.
Yes. We can multitask in ways that no one will ever appreciate, but that's okay. That is more than okay. Situation with the housing, Karen. One of the things that I thought was genius is the opportunity for them to incorporate multiple cities and have a kind of like a countywide campus rather than just a narrow campus. Has that allowed the city managers and I guess the county CAO, whoever that might be, to work together in concert to be able to have everybody kind of on the same wavelength and be able to work together to really address some of the student housing and then the associated impacts?
We certainly talk about it, but I think everyone's just trying to step up to do their piece. You know, Eureka has been working with the university for probably 4 years, at least since Dr. Jackson's been here, specifically on some student housing projects as well. You know, they've had the aquatic center, the boat is out of Eureka, you know, so there's always been a lot of activity around Humboldt in Eureka. I think they're also going to offer kind of a satellite campus store in Eureka, so we've got a couple options for that. And then we've just known. I mean, McKinleyville, Manila, Blue Lake, all those areas have supported the university with housing traditionally. And so to be able to have more dedicated housing towards that in each of those communities, I think it's just going to meet their student population. You know, a lot of HSU students right now, our big market has been transfer students. A lot of those transfer students come with partners, spouses, families, you know, and they're looking for more traditional housing than necessarily student housing. So having a mix in HSU's portfolio will be important. But we're also a commuter campus, so they are very focused on adding, you know, a couple of thousand beds, like doubling their capacity for on-campus housing. Because they have a real need for that for students that are coming from out of the area, their first and second years.
So as you're putting all that together in coordinating, is there a shared vision on how the housing is going to be addressed? It's obviously, you know, you don't want to have one community going crazy and another one not doing anything just because of inertia.
Yeah, no, the shared vision is basically around identifying properties and how many beds they can hold and making sure that there's a build-out plan that meets their enrollment projections. That's not finalized yet, but that is certainly what's in discussion at this point. And the initial stages, right, like we talked about, their first build-out will be some on campus and will be Craftsman Mall, right, because those are ready-to-go projects that have actually been in the pipeline. Followed soon after, I assume, by one in Eureka that's been in the pipeline for well over a year and a half. So that pre-work, even before we knew Polytech was even an option, is really going to pay off.
It would seem to be something that we could have anticipated just in with some of the other projects that we've been hearing about, you know, the fiber optic line, the fish folks, the I guess, fleeing from the urban settings and as well as with the fire. Do you see signs that anybody was really anticipating this stuff, or do you sense that it's going to be kind of like a mad rush here to get things up and running in the next couple of years?
I see Humboldt moving at a very fast pace, but I would not describe it as a mad rush. I find Dr. Jackson's team to be very methodical and creating a plan and working that plan, right? Like we were talking in the academic setting.
So, right. That makes sense. I was thinking more of the lines of the private sector responding to what's going on and or the permitting processes and the governmental, not the educational, but the governmental,
sure,
to be able to maybe fast track a couple developments or waive some developmental fees or whatever it is so that we maybe lot size adjustments down, not the mother-in-law things, but just smaller lots and allowing, you know, maybe 1,000 square foot homes or 1,200 square foot homes rather than what has existed traditionally. I mean, things like that that other communities have dealt with, but Humboldt just hasn't.
Well, I think we have actually, from a policy perspective, dealt with quite a bit of that. What we haven't had is the pressure to put it into place.
Hmm.
So, you know, both Arcata and Eureka have strong, what we call accessory dwelling units. We used to call them mother-in-law units, right? So we have strong policy for quick build-out of second, third units, you know, on existing properties that may have one single-family household. That is a great way to get density. And is kind of in a mixed housing options.
Right, but a lot, you know, you guys aren't going to do that in your backyard. We're not going to do that in our backyard. But that doesn't, so that might be applicable if it's an investment property. But if it's your primary dwelling, you're probably not going to be inclined to do something like that. I was just thinking.
Well, we're seeing a lot of them. Yeah, and I suppose here in Arcata, well over 50% of our single-family residential are investment properties for people. So we do see a lot of that here. But also, if it's a state property, such as like the Craftsman Mall property will be state-owned if it isn't already. And so they don't go through city permitting. That goes through the state architect.
Yes.
And they do all of their permitting on their own, right? And so they'll work with us because we have a lot of connectivity. We've got grants that will be bringing trail connectivity to that property. and transportation. You know, we'll work with them on busing and circulation and, you know, roads and sidewalks and all of that stuff and infrastructure. You know, ultimately they'll pull water and sewer from the city as well.
Right, right.
But a lot of the permitting for their construction doesn't go through the local government.
So it's it's kind of like surprise time then. Yay! All right. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. Karen, what kind of feedback were you getting? And I know you use it as an opportunity when the parents bring Johnny or Jane Jr. to town to go to school. Were you hearing any comments from those folks this year that were any different from what they have been over the last few years?
We're just starting to see folks come back, but actually the comments that I'm hearing are more geared towards how nice it is to be out of the urban areas during the pandemic, and as California starts to surge, to be in an area where their students have a lot of options for outdoor activities that are safe. So I'm hearing a lot more talk about the pandemic so far, I think, than as we get closer into sort of, you know, the Polytech build-out. I'm hearing a lot more talk from locals about the excitement of extra, you know, science programs and curriculum. But from people coming in from out of the area, they're either thrilled to be out of the smoke or they're just thrilled to be out of the kind of hustle of the urban, not being able to get away from people in the pandemic.
Yeah, I wonder in a weird sense that this might be another wave on top of what we've already experienced as the parents come here and then they figure out that there may be some way that they can relocate here. Particularly with some of the stuff that's going on at the airport. I've got an event in Michigan. Sometime next month. Direct flight from here to Phoenix to Detroit. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is so cool. I can't wait to get on that thing and fly over San Francisco and just kind of look down and keep going. I think some of that stuff is really going to be interesting. I would love to find out what the numbers are from people out of Arizona flying here.
I was on the Denver flight on Monday coming in, and the sad thing you're going to see when you fly out of here is that you fly over all the fires, and it's just devastating to see from above. But the funnest part about my flight home was we landed in Arcata, and there was a airplane traffic jam in the Arcata airport. Three planes landed within about a half an hour of each other or 15 minutes of each other, and we had to wait on the tarmac to be able to actually get to a gate. And so, I mean, people were just kind of joking because we were all sort of excited.
Right. Oh, well, and then you had the baggage claim roulette that probably was compounded. Let's just say it that way, huh? Didn't think they could layer the bags up on that conveyor belt.
It really was exciting. All the planes seemed full. People seemed excited. I think one was American, so it must have been coming in from Phoenix, and then that direct flight from Denver is just such a game changer for this region,
isn't it though? I mean, it just makes it. I'm really curious to see what the numbers are, not the tickets and the seats, but the percentage for the flights turned back. Because everybody has always said it's San Francisco, it's San Francisco, it's San Francisco, not up here. And I'm wondering if that really is the case and if we will start to see a lot of these planes that were turned around before land, which would really make things so nice. You've had a little bit of a situation with, I guess you would call them staff, since last we got together. I don't know how the electeds are it would be your boss. Sorry.
Yeah, they would be my boss. I would not call my elected staff.
I just backed up
a little bit.
Yeah.
Technically employees of the city. That's true.
Yeah. I think everybody's pretty familiar with what happened. How does something like that impact the organization?
It's certainly unfortunate. You know, it's a very personal issue for him. I understand that there is interest kind of from a political and a community standpoint, you know, around decisions that leaders make in a community. You know, of course, I wish I could say it's the first time Arcata has been through this. It isn't. And I guess for me, we have a lot of staff, electeds and non-electeds, that work really, really hard at sort of the reputation and the work that Arcata does every day. So anytime that a misstep or a misjudgment and mistakes are made, you know, I think that it does certainly paint a picture, as we see from the media, on the city as a whole. But at the end of the day, situations like this are really personal to the individual. And I think once people start to think through it, they really recognize that, and that it's really not a reflection on the operations of the city and the business and the service that we provide to the community. And in this case, you know, I think he's working to address his constituents directly. Some in the more open public area, a lot on a one-on-one level, and is working through that decision process on his own, on, you know, where his strengths are in terms of being able to lead. We have 4 very new council members, and he brings right now not only the facilitator lead as mayor, but also the historic elected knowledge to the council. They're hard decisions for him to weigh.
So with something like this, the city chugs along as it would otherwise, I would suspect. But
absolutely.
But
yeah.
Any thought that he should step aside and have someone else assume the role of mayor while whatever it is gets worked out and he kind of cleans his act up, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that's the decision-making process that he's going through personally, and working with his colleagues and working with the constituents and talking to the public here and making those decisions right now. So I don't know where that will land, but he has continued to certainly lead. There's been no break in that for him as well.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with 3 airlines serving 5 destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Karen Diemer. Karen, the city made some accommodations over the last year or so with businesses to be able to function, to be able to survive during this last little bit. I'm thinking of the outdoor space on the sidewalks.
All that
kind of stuff. I know that initially that was all hoped to be temporary. With this relapse or whatever we can call this thing, round 2, is there any thought to making these permanent and just say, okay, guys, we're going to do this. Yeah, we may lose some parking slots. We may have some different processes as people move around, but we're going to let the infrastructure stay in place. And as a consequence of that, if you have that restaurant with a kickout, okay, that's a permanent thing if you choose that that's what you want to do, and not do the, well, we could pull it out at any time or if conditions change, because now we're starting to get with the time and the week over week, now this is part of their operation. It's part of how they're going to make things and survive. To have that pulled away, you know, that's another adjustment they would have to make down the road.
Right. The city has been really open and I think interested in if there's businesses that would like to make these outdoor dining sites, even if there's public property encroachment per se, permanent, if they're interested. Our climate is becoming more moderate. People love the outdoor dining, COVID or not. You know, it's just fun to be eating outdoors in Humboldt County. Some of the spaces have been more successful from, I'd say, the community standpoint than others. You know, some, because your alcohol license, the outdoor seating has to touch, like has to directly be adjacent to your property, has to touch your actual business property line. There's some that are on fairly major roads, you know, that don't feel as safe, that probably aren't going to get as much use over time. And then there's others that have just fit really well, you know, into parking areas that could be cordoned off forever. So what I've actually seen is some businesses that are all in on the outdoor dining are starting to create their own spaces. If you come by a fish restaurant, Salt here in Arcata, fabulous, that moved locations during the pandemic, and they had in their new location kind of an old dilapidated outdoor entryway, and they've just completely renovated that, and it's off-site, off-street, for outdoor dining. That's going to be a real permanent site for them. The Cranberry District, the pub, has also done, I think, really permanent installation of outdoor dining that they'll keep and have forever. So, and there are several bulb outs still in the area that we would encourage to stay, and we'll just see. You know, we've also seen a lot of the restaurants, and as we come into the winter, I think people will start to hunker back into their spaces, and then come next spring, I think we'll really have businesses look at, all right, do you want making a permanent investment in an outdoor seating area, or what you did over the winter, is that where you want to focus on?
Now, I would think that that's a little bit of a challenge. If I'm renting from you, okay, do I incur the cost? Do you as the landlord incur the cost? Or because the jurisdiction is also seeing benefits from this, is this treated as a sidewalk and kind of like ADA improvement and that the jurisdiction covers the cost? Or is it shared? I mean, how is the dollars? Because I would suspect that these aren't cheap things to do if it's going to be permanent.
Yeah, they don't have to be super expensive, but I mean, it depends on how elaborate the restaurant wants to get. Typically, what I've seen in other communities is right now there's a lot of COVID money, right? And so we've had a lot of business grants and loans, you know, that could convert into grants that could do COVID modifications. And so a lot of businesses have used that to support their outdoor temporary spaces. There are still funds available through grants and loans to do some of the permanent structure potentially. But pre-pandemic, you know, the ones that we've seen go up, really the business ultimately just leases that space. And they might lease it for a dollar a year or they might lease it for a market rate, but it is exclusive to that business and they have the right to say you can or cannot be here and therefore, you know, they've paid for those improvements on it.
To the business or to the property that the business is located in?
The business has paid for the improvements on what would be, let's say, city right-of-way, but then has, you know, an exclusive lease for that.
Right. So if they relocate to another storefront, then that goes away?
Well, they could, yeah. I mean, they could take the improvements with them, or they could potentially sell them with the business.
Oh, okay. I was thinking things like cement. Kind of like what Eureka is doing in Henderson Center with a couple of the restaurants in an old town, where it's a permanent kickout rather than a temporary thing.
And in a situation like that, it could be shared, or it could be that, you know, I know the city of Eureka has similar business grant programs right now that they could be utilizing those COVID grants to put that infrastructure in. So there is not a cost to the business up front right now. And then if the business does choose to leave, that improvement stays there for the next business.
That makes sense. Hey, nice hearing from you, if not seeing you.
Yeah, no, great to talk with you. Farmers Market is at its peak in Arcata Saturday. We open at 9.
Take your radio with the shopping show so you can save and then spend local, right?
Perfect.
I knew that's where you were going. Thanks. See you around. See everybody tomorrow.
Bye-bye.